Hello, friends. Welcome to Islington Listens, wisdom from a community of faith that doesn't think the same, vote the same, or love the same, but we are trying our best to follow in the way of Jesus with compassion and hope. You may be doubting this morning if you could sing with joy and you found yourself. You may be unsure if you could sing in French and you're going all the way back to school days to dig into your vocabulaire and you found it. May that be the prayer this morning. For on the second Sunday of Easter, we remember that one night in Jerusalem, the disciples gathered in a room with the door shut, for they were afraid that the soldiers would come and take them away as they had for Jesus. And someone said, "Peace be with you." And they looked up, and it was Jesus. Now, they thought at first that he was a ghost, but then he talked to them, and he was with them. They looked at his wounds, and he ate some fish and opened the scriptures for them. And finally, again, he said, "Peace be with you," and he was gone. Now, Thomas was not with them that night. And so when they told him about it, he did not believe them. Thomas had doubt in his bones. He said, "Until I can touch his wounds, then will I believe." Of course, he didn't believe, for their minds were just stretching, not quite yet big enough to understand how they could know Jesus in this new way. 8 days passed, and again, the disciples were in a room with the door shut. And Thomas was with them this time, and a voice said, "Peace be with you." And it was he. And this time, Jesus went right to Thomas, and he put out his hand and he said, "Touch me." And all Thomas could do was fall to his knees. And Jesus just looked at him for a long time and he smiled. And then he looked up and he looked at each one in the circle and he said to them, "Blessed are those who, even though they haven't seen, still believe." Believing the unbelievable, experiencing the impossible and the unexpected, isn't that what Easter is all about? God actually, through all of our scripture, is upending all of our oh-so-reasonable expectations of the world. Who would expect a universe created out of nothing, created by a word? Who would expect a wandering sheep herder to bear God's blessing to the world? Who would expect a race of slaves in Egypt to become the chosen people of God, the people to bear God's promise? Who would expect it? Who would expect God to be born in a barnyard, to first lay his head in a cow's feeding trough? Who would expect that salvation could come through death on a cross of all things? Thomas doubted, and Jesus proved him wrong. And last Sunday, Resurrection Sunday, reminds us that God gets the last word, resurrection. And this Sunday, we're invited to rest in that hope and to laugh. Holy Humor Sunday is part of the church's celebration of Jesus rising from the grave and breaking the bonds of sin and promoting humor and laughter and peace as signs of our faith in a risen Savior. It is laughable. In fact, in our time, people think it's almost unbelievable to believe in that. God does not want us to take ourselves too seriously. God wants us to step into humility and gratitude and awe, to step outside of ourselves and laugh at our own folly, our own mistakes, at the sheer improbability of grace, to laugh at the wonder and the strangeness and the beauty of the world in surprised delight. In fact, I heard someone this morning say, when I have a hard time getting still or meditating, when I'm trying my best to pray and it doesn't work, I ask myself, what am I noticing that's beautiful? What can I focus on and spend time there? Some of us, it's how we look when we get dressed in the morning. We come from a long history in the church of wearing your Easter bonnet or best. I am grateful that some of that has relaxed. But a little girl dressed in her Sunday best was running as fast as she could so she wouldn't be late for church. And as she ran, she prayed, "Dear God, please don't let me be late. Please don't let me be late." While she was running and praying, she tripped on a curb and fell, getting her clothes dirty and tearing her dress. She got up, she brushed herself off, and started running again. And as she ran, she once again prayed, "Dear Lord, please don't let me be late, and please don't shove me either." After the baptism of his baby brother in church, Jason sobbed all the way home in the back seat of the car. His dad asked him 3 times what was wrong, and finally the little boy replied, "That preacher, she said she wanted us to be brought up in a Christian home, and I want to stay with you guys." One Sunday after church, a mom asked her very young daughter what the lesson was about. The daughter answered, "Don't be scared, you'll get your quilt." Needless to say, the mom was perplexed. Later in the day, the minister stopped by for tea and the mom asked her what that morning's Sunday school lesson was about. And she said, "Be not afraid, thy comforter is coming." A Sunday school teacher of preschoolers told her students that she wanted each of them to have learned one fact about Jesus by Sunday. The following week, she asked each child in turn what they had learned. Susie said, "He was born in a manger." Bobby said, "He threw the money changers out of the temple." Little Johnny said, "He has a red pickup truck, but he doesn't know how to drive it." Curious, the teacher asked, "And where did you learn that, Johnny?" "From my dad," said Johnny. "Yesterday we were driving down the highway and this red pickup truck pulled out in front of us and Dad yelled at him, 'Jesus Christ, why don't you learn how to drive?'" Exactly. They are watching. They are listening. They are wondering how we interpret what this Easter promise means to us. We have to go farther afield to be reminded. In Nigeria, the name of God is Father of Laughter. And theologian Reinhold Niebuhr said, "Humor is the prelude to faith, and laughter is the beginning of prayer." Laughter is a sign of faith. And even in the book of Job, where not much laughter and much pain can be found, it says, "May God fill your mouth with laughter." In Dante's Divine Comedy, as the weary traveler finally reaches the last steps up to the gates of heaven, he trembles to hear a mighty roaring ahead, but is jubilant to discover that it is the sound of heavenly laughter in his ears. We know that it feels good to laugh. We know that it's complicated when what's funny for one is hurtful for another. And so we know the test of good humor when we can find the place where we can laugh at ourselves and not at each other in pain. Research has revealed the importance of laughter in the process of healing. And Jesus was about healing. The late Norman Cousins, noted editor of the Saturday Review, pioneered this field when he treated his own serious life-threatening illness with steady doses of laughter. Some years later, a number of studies indicate that one consistent quality in those who recover or live longer with cancer is that they have a good sense of humor, an optimistic spirit, and a tendency to easy laughter. For some of us, it doesn't come easy. I hope you'll find a little bit of it this morning. Because it's good for your heart, for your cardiovascular system. It's really important to pay attention that when we laugh, our breathing changes. Our heart rate, our blood pressure, and our muscular tension increase. When laughter subsides, however, these things drop temporarily below normal and result in feelings of relaxation, which may last as long as 45 minutes after the last laugh. A woman, Sue Mins, was diagnosed with MS. And when she left the doctor's office, she told her family, "That's awesome. Now I'm going to get great parking spots." The family was so upset and worried about her reaction to the diagnosis that they wrote to the doctor and were concerned about her attitude. They're like, "We're not sure what to do with Mom." The last thing she said was, "I'm going to be able to wear red stiletto-style high-heel shoes, and they're not even going to hurt my feet." We've been close to people who have paid attention to the things we can laugh at in some of our deepest trials. Michael J. Fox is the one who told us laughter is the best medicine. In terms of his Parkinson's disease, he said, "The truth is that on most days, there comes a point when I literally can't stop laughing at my own symptoms." Laughter. Encouragement. I was thinking this morning of how Carol Lawton used to email us every week when the food bank was figuring out how to offer their ministry during COVID, how she would use her jokes to make people laugh. And when her grandchildren weren't sure what to do next, it was daily jokes that they shared together that kept them going. The sermon this morning is dedicated to another encourager through humor, Bill Drennan, whose emails have been a bit edited for this sermon, so I picked, I think, the best ones and doubled down. We can all remember his Scottish brogue. We loved hearing him read scripture, but telling a good joke was another. And even when his emails came into me, I could hear his voice as I was reading them. The last couple that I found, he said, "Because my dear old Scottish football team lost so badly yesterday in the Euro Cup, I felt that I needed a good laugh." How often we forget to turn to humor when life seems hard. And so he sent me this cartoon of a horse with a zebra leg at the back attached. And the horse is talking to another horse saying, "I can't say I'm entirely happy with my hip replacement." Then he sent me an older couple who were at breakfast. It's a cartoon. And the older man is crunching the numbers with a ticker tape out of the calculator, saying, they must be in their 90s, saying to her, "Well, it looks like we need to move back in with your parents." And there's a plethora of Scottish jokes, but how about a neighbor knocked on my door at 3 a.m., but luckily I was up playing the bagpipes. As a piper, I play many gigs, sometimes weddings, but more often funerals. Recently, I was asked by a funeral director to play at a graveside service for an old hermit who lived by himself in a cabin in the woods as long as anyone could remember. He didn't have any family or friends, so the service would be in an isolated area on a back road in the countryside. As I was not familiar with this area, I got lost and I didn't even stop and ask for directions. I finally arrived an hour late and saw that this man had evidently been gone and buried, and the hearse was nowhere in sight. There were only the diggers and the crew left, and they were eating lunch. I felt badly, so I apologized to the men for being late. I went to the side of the grave opening, and I looked down, and it appeared they'd already put the lid on the vault. I didn't know what else to do, so I warmed up my bagpipes and started to play. The workers put down their lunches and began to gather around. I played my heart and soul out for this man who had no family and friends. I played like I'd never played before. And as I started to play Amazing Grace, the workers began to weep. They wept and wept, and we all cried together. And when I packed up my bagpipes and started for my car, though my head hung low, my heart was full. As I opened the door, I heard one of the workers say, "Sweet Mother of Jesus, I never seen nothing like that before, and I've been putting septic tanks in my whole life." Not bad, Jay. So there are many Donald Trump jokes that Bill sent to me. Because when we wrestle with how to deal with the struggles in the world and who we're voting for and who's leading, sometimes we have to laugh a little. So here's the only one I could share. This test has only one question, Situation Ethics 101, but it's very important. By giving an honest answer, you'll discover where you stand ethically. The test features an unlikely and completely fictional situation in which you'll have to make a decision. Only you will know the results, so remember, your answer needs to be completely honest. Here's the situation. You're in Palm Beach with chaos all around you caused by a hurricane. You are a photojournalist working for a major newspaper, and you're caught in the middle of this disaster. There is a flood of biblical proportion. The situation is nearly hopeless, and you're trying to shoot career-making photos. There are houses and automobiles swirling around you, and nature is unleashing its fury. The test. Suddenly, you see a man in the water. He's fighting for his life, trying not to be taken down with the debris, and you move closer. Somehow, this man looks like, wow, it's Donald Trump. At the same time, you realize the raging waters are about to take him under forever. You have two options. You can save the life of Donald Trump, or you can shoot a Pulitzer Prize dramatic winning photo documenting the last minute of one of the world's most powerful leaders hell-bent on destroying the earth. Your decision? Okay, here's the question, and please give an honest answer. Would you select high contrast color film or go with the classic simplicity black and white? That's right. That's right. Oh, it just keeps going, Blair, so just hold on. We don't have screens, so I can't show you the plethora of videos I've received in my 8 years as Bill's minister. Many are, he liked a good joke about people in the world, and one of those was he sent me a Bud Light beer commercial, which he thought I should use as the rummage sale advertisement, which was that at work there was a clothing drive that for every piece of clothing you donated, you'd receive a free can of beer. And the video proceeds that people forgot to bring their clothes in, so by the end of the video, everyone's in their underwear because they've given away. Only Bill would send me that. He also sent me an interview with a woman who is 100 years old who told the story about being caught in a windstorm and her skirt riding up, but she was wearing a brand new hat, so it didn't matter to her. She said, "What's down below is 100 years old, but this is a brand new hat." He helped me to put aging in perspective, and so I'll share with you three jokes from an old-timer. On the first day, God created the dog and said, "Sit all day by the door of your house and bark at anyone who comes in or walks past. For this, I'll give you a lifespan of almost 20 years. The dog said, "That's a long time to be barking. How about only 10 years and I'll give you back the other 10? So God agreed. On the second day, God created the monkey and said, "Entertain people, do tricks, make them laugh. For this, I'll give you a lifespan of 25 years. The monkey said, "That's a long time to perform tricks. How about I give you back 10 like the dog did?" And God agreed. On the third day, God created the cow and said, "You must go into the field with the farmer all day long and suffer under the sun, have calves, and give milk to support the farmer's family. For this, I'll give you 60 years. The cow said, "That's a tough life. You want me to live for 60 years? How about 20, and I'll give you 40 back? God agreed. On the fourth day, God created the first human and said, "Eat, sleep, play, and enjoy your life. For this, I'll give you 20 years. But the human said, "Only 20? Could you possibly give me my 20? How about the 40 the cow gave back, the 10 the monkey gave, and the 10 the dog gave? That makes about 80, okay?" "Okay," said God, "you got it." So this is why our first 20 years we eat, sleep, play, and enjoy ourselves. For the next 40, we slave in the sun to support our family. For the next 10 years, we do monkey tricks to entertain the grandchildren and neighborhood kids. And for the last 10 years, we sit on the front porch and bark at everyone. I don't usually get to tell the age jokes because then people think I'm ageist, but Bill gave me two more. "Never underestimate the elderly," he said. The old lady handed her bank card to a bank teller and said, "I'd like to withdraw $500. The teller told her, "For withdrawals less than $5,000, please use the ATM." The lady said, "Why?" The teller irritably told her, "These are the rules. Please leave if there's no other matter. There's a queue behind you." She then returned the card to the old lady. The old lady remained silent, but then she returned the card to the teller and said, "Please help me withdraw all the money I have." The teller was astonished when she checked the account balance and said, "My apologies, Granny. You have $3.5 million in your account, and our bank does not have so much cash currently. Could you make an appointment and come back again tomorrow?" The old lady then asked, "How much am I able to withdraw now?" The teller said, "Any amount up to $300,000. The old lady then told the teller she wanted to withdraw $300,000 from her account. The teller did so quickly and handed it to the old lady respectfully. The old lady kept $500 in her bag and asked the teller to deposit $299,500 back into her account. Don't be difficult with old people. We can outwit the young and the technologically advanced. 3 old grandmas were sitting on a bench outside a nursing home when a grandpa walked by. And one of the grandmas yelled out, "We bet we can tell exactly how old you are." The old man said, "There's no way you can guess it, you old fools." One of the grandmas said, "Sure we can. Just drop your pants and under your shorts, we can tell exactly your age." Embarrassed a little, but anxious to prove they couldn't do it, he dropped his pants, and the grandmas asked him to turn around and jump up and down a couple of times. They all piped up and said, "You're 87 years old." Standing with his pants down around his ankles, the grandpa asked, "How in the world did you guess?" Slapping their knees and grinning from ear to ear, the three ladies happily yelled in unison, "We were at your birthday party yesterday." That's right. That's right. And when you are sad, we take ourselves less seriously. We pay attention to how hard we work to take care of our bodies and to celebrate them as they age. We ask for grace and we find love in seeing people continuing to serve in the world and make a difference, whatever age God uses them. Last night I watched the movie 80 for Brady, which is Rita Moreno. She's 92 years old, the actress. Lily Tomlin's 84, Sally Field's 77, and Jane Fonda's 86, even though she doesn't look like it. They're Super Bowl fans of course, Tom Brady. But there is a reminder to me in that movie that naming out loud what brings you joy, sharing it with others along the way, no matter how hard things are, we're called to look for that. The other thing is, what do you want people to say about you when you're gone? The thing about email, which you know I struggle with using because I'd rather have a conversation, when someone you love is gone, you can put their name into the search engine of your email, and what will come up is all the emails you've shared with them. What do you want people to read that you've passed on and shared with them while you're gone? It'll make you think twice before you send an email without thinking about it. It might make me spell check, perhaps, or at least not use caps so people think I'm yelling. There's an invitation in living into the joy of life to live with the end in mind. And for us, we know the end is eternity. We know the Easter promise. But on the way to getting there, we get to choose how we want to bring others alongside. And so I was thinking, I know you're like, a holy humor sermon is going to end with an obituary. Yes, it is. Because Lou Michaels, so I'm not really into football, but I was doing some research because of the movie I just watched. And Lou Michaels was an all-purpose player. The headline of his obituary in the paper said, "Lou Michaels, all-purpose player, dies at 80, missed kicks in the 69 Super Bowl." That's his obituary title. Can you imagine? Lou Michaels, all-purpose player, dies at 80, missed kicks in the 69 Super Bowl. And so a poet reading that obituary calls us into what it might mean to hold our mistakes lightly. Her name is Rosemary Traumer, and here are her words. She's a writer, a journalist, and a poet. When I die, let them write about all the mistakes I've made. Let them mention in the headlines how many rejection letters I've received from the Sun. Let them say, "Mr. Calling" for Broadway back in 1987. Let them say, "She trained hard but never won a Nordic skate race." They can note how my children fought in front of company, how every chocolate cake I made sank in the center, how the beets in my garden were never bigger than golf balls, how I never even watched the Super Bowl, much less knew who played for the Colts back in 1969 while I was still forming in my mother's womb, and Lou Michaels missed 2 field goals that helped the Jets win. What do any of us really accomplish? My friend Wayne says, "We do what we can and have mercy." Yes, let them say I did what I could. Let them say that I loved the best I knew how and messed that up too. It's what we do, we who are kicking our way to the back pages of the paper, well-intentioned and floundering, faithful and confused as we are. We mess up. Yes, mercy on us. Mercy on all our failing little hearts, how they beat so sincerely. Mercy on this longing to shine, this reminder again to kneel. For all Thomas could do was kneel. So if you remember nothing from this sermon, take 3 things. Be careful what you email as it's left behind. Read your obituaries with the funny pages and keep noticing and praying, for God is giving us laughter. Thanks be to God. Thanks for listening, friends. For other ways to connect, go to islingtonunited.org. May God's wisdom and love keep finding you.